This is the Growth Stage Podcast, and here's your host, David Vogelpohl.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Growth Stage, a podcast by FastSpring, where we discuss how SaaS and digital product companies grow revenue, build meaningful products, and increase the value of their business. I'm David Vogelpohl. I support the digital product community as part of my role with FastSpring, and I love to bring the best of the community to you here on the Growth Stage podcast. Today's episode, we're going to be talking about marketing your video game outside of game marketplaces and app stores. And joining us for that conversation is someone who knows quite a bit about that. I'd like to welcome to Growth Stage of Skillshot and Ghost Gaming, Mr. Todd Harris. Todd, welcome to Growth Stage.
Thanks, David. It's good to be here with you.
Awesome. We're so happy to have you here. And for those listening and watching, what we're going to talk to Todd about today are his thoughts on why marketplaces can be a difficult place to actually attract new players, and what are some alternative strategies that you can employ, including leveraging influencers, advertising, and other aspects of marketing outside of game marketplaces. So, Todd, I'd like to kick off the interview by asking you first, what was the first video game you ever paid for? Not played, but actually paid for with your own money.
Wow. The first game I paid for was an obscure title. I suspect listeners may not be familiar with it. Temple of Apshai, which if you were an old school Dungeons and Dragons pen and paper role player like myself, Temple of Apshai was an early implementation of a dungeon crawler that was on the TRS-80, and I bought it for the IBM personal computer. This would be early 80s. So fairly old school gamer, paid for that. I have to mention another game, maybe even more satisfying, because I got a box copy that I didn't pay for. Byte Magazine, when I was a teenager, I wrote to Byte Magazine and said, hey, I'll do video game reviews for you. If you send me the game, you don't have to pay me. And they sent me a game called Conquest, which was a port of Joust. Anyone who knows arcade games, Joust, Conquest was a version of that, also for the IBM personal computer. So that was a box copy that I earned with a different sort of sweat labor than dollars. So those were two early games in my collection.
Very clever approach there with Byte Magazine. I'm impressed that it worked. That's awesome. I could see where that would be way more satisfying than buying Temple of Ashi with your own money. That's a great origin story there. So I'm wondering if you could tell me a little bit before we get into the kind of topics at hand about Skillshot and Ghost Gaming and what you do there.
Sure. So and my background into games quickly, even before Skillshot, is a company, Hi-Rez Studios. So certainly relevant for my perspective on game marketing is the fact that I spent about 15 years making video games. So we developed video games. I'm a co-founder of Hi-Rez Studios. I've since exited that business and focused on these other companies. But at Hi-Rez, we developed games. And of course, as an independent developer, also marketed those games. And that company reached over 150 million players between all of the different game titles that it published. So that really informed my view on game marketing. And it's really hard to develop a game. It's even harder these days to get people to know that that game exists. So in 2020, I left Hi-Rez and started this new company, Skillshot. And Skillshot, at the end of the day, is an event production company. But we saw so much value at Hi-Rez marketing through events that we felt it could be a standalone business. And so that's what Skillshot is. And I think as we talk today about marketing, I'll continue to come back to themes of basically community, content, creators meaning influencers, but in the gaming world, they're called creators. So community, content, creators and those themes. And so at Hi-Rez, as a game developer, we leaned into all of those lanes. And at Skillshot, we now provide some of those services to other companies, whether they're game makers or other companies wanting to grow their brand and their audience.
And that's an important distinction as we think about the topics, you know, at hand today around marketing your game outside of game marketplaces. Is your background, I think, with Hi-Rez as an independent game developer, you know, you're not able to leverage the brand recognition that bigger titles are able to leverage. And I hear you talk about, you know, community content and creators. You know, bigger studios, obviously, and bigger titles attract those kind of organically without even having to try. And so, you know, there's an opportunity for others to take advantage of these strategies. And so as I think about it from the independent side, I think that'll be a good background for the topics we're going to cover today, Todd. What about Ghost Gaming? What does Ghost Gaming do? And what is its connection to Skillshot?
So if Skillshot is a little more behind the scenes and fundamentally a business-to-business company, Ghost is a consumer-facing brand, so very much a business-to-consumer brand. And we, our management group, acquired Ghost about a year after starting Skillshot. And Ghost originally was esports brand built in Los Angeles. I'm a little bit covering up the logo here, but we really liked the logo. We thought it was just a clean look and somewhat differentiated in the esports space. And since acquiring it, we've really invested in creators. So we continue to have teams that play on behalf of Ghost and try to win gaming tournaments. That's the esports side. They're professional players who play to win. But we also now have a large roster of creators who are leaning into gaming to entertain. They're very good. They're better than you and I, and they're better than 90% of the population, but not 99%. So they're live streaming, they're creating content on platforms like YouTube and Twitch and TikTok. And so Ghost really is a gaming lifestyle brand, and it often works with our clients in conjunction with Skillshot. So Skillshot can run a great event. Ghost brings in the eyeballs and an additional set of relevant, authentic content because it's coming from creators in very popular games. So they're both sibling companies under one hold co, which I manage.
Okay, so that's a good complimentary offering then for Skillshot. I could see why you would be attracted to that opportunity when it first emerged, and then evolving it to include creators and leverage that between the two makes a lot of sense. Have you seen companies, smaller studios have success with creating their own creators? It sounds like you kind of did that a bit through acquisition and modifying the strategy of Ghost Gaming a little bit, but is that a common strategy you think can be successful for smaller studios, like inventing their own creator roster?
Certainly so. So I think that I would advise any studio in the very early days to focus on community first. So as I say, there's community, there's content, there are creators. It all really starts with community. And before reaching out to an external company, and I'd love for them to reach out to us at Skillshot and Ghost, but that's a second phase. The first phase is focusing on your own community. And from that community, it often births organic content creators because they're passionate about this game, the game genre, or the art style, or the development team. Something resonates with them and they think, you know, I'm going to support these folks and maybe I'm going to earn some money for myself as a creator. And so definitely encourage studios to grow those homegrown creators, even if they're small, even if they're micro influencers, because every community needs those leaders, even if your community is small. And so very specifically, we recommend if you're working on a game as early as possible, certainly establish a community on Discord, right? That is a platform that is endemic to gaming, and that, unlike some other platforms where the algorithms shift and you might lose the ability to directly talk to the community that you've built, you just never know. Discord, at least for now, it's your virtual server. It's your community. You can have an ongoing conversation with them. It's not algorithmic driven. So start a Discord community as early as possible. Share early glimpses of your game with concept art or videos. It doesn't have to be very polished. And it's very likely that out of that Discord community, some organic creators will certainly arise. And that's really the very first important step, I would say, for anyone making a game today that, to your point, can't lean into a franchise that everyone already knows, or maybe some first party relationship with some other IP that everyone knows. They're really starting something new and from scratch.
Okay, so that's sage advice. And so the idea is to create my community early on, leverage Discord as my platform for that, and then try to get that community going, if you will, so that way creators naturally emerge from it. And regardless of where your strategy goes in terms of paying or partnering or trying to gain the attention of influencers, it sounds like what you're implying is that the root of that should be your own community, and Discord is a great place to have that be the home. Is that a good rundown of that, Todd?
100%. Yeah. And again, I'm speaking from our firsthand approach at Hi-Rez, even before we started these other companies, and even before Discord was a thing, we did it with forums, even before Reddit and before Discord, there were company owned forums, but the philosophy was the same: talk to your community early and often. And those advocates, that's the kindling that you need to eventually, hopefully, start a growing fire of enthusiasm for your project. And so you want to nurture that community today, specifically on Discord, and feed the kindling oxygen through drops of new information about your game, so that they know by being a part of that community, they're getting those early looks and potentially helping to influence it. That's another thing that we used at Hi-Rez and many game developers are doing now, is that feedback cycle. So it's a two-way conversation, not just throwing content at that audience, but whether it's surveys or whether it's meet and greets and conversations like this with some of the key community influencers, and really bring them in to the development process. And I think that generationally, this generation of gamers, they like seeing behind the scenes, they like learning how the sausage is made, and they like to have a voice, even if it's not always listened to. And that's very different from those early games that I bought or earned. It was the developer was on the ivory tower and they just handed a box and people liked it or didn't. But now it's a much more organic process, like developing an app, where it's iterative.
Yeah, pushed updates definitely changed the speed at which that feedback loop could be applied. So I'm curious, and it's interesting to hear you were a co-founder there at Hi-Rez. So I'm guessing even maybe up to the time you left, when you launch a new game, maybe it was difficult to get people to join that Discord channel or the forum or subreddit or whatever it was. What were some techniques you used to get people to participate in that conversation? Were you adding calls to action within your games? Were you approaching it in different ways? Like, for someone launching a new space, how did they get people to join it?
Yeah, so I think, and you're right, again, and after one successful game and one email list and other things, it's easier to transfer folks to your new project and you develop a reputation. And we saw that at Hi-Rez, from not having any games to publishing multiple games. But I mean, to get started, it really is being somewhat active and familiar with the space of adjacent game genres. And so, you know, for those out there making games, there are waves of genres of popularity. You know, Battle Royale wasn't a thing until it became a thing. And then there were multiple genres associated with it. And so there tend to be early adopters that are fans of a certain genre in terms of the mechanics of the game, or maybe art style. They really like anime presentation, maybe tech. You know, they're following the latest new graphical developments. And so a short snippet, these days video, it doesn't have to be that polished, but a little video that is showing what you're up to, and then simply a call for people to join the community. I think in the early days, it doesn't have to be much more complicated than that. Just putting out there that this is the project, that these are the maybe some of the key folks involved, sharing one or two pieces of concept art or gameplay that you feel are really a hook. And even more specifically, when it comes to content, these days I would advise vertical content, short form and shareable. You know, the nice thing about the social media platforms now are between TikTok, YouTube Shorts, Instagram Reels, like one piece of content recorded vertically can be repurposed and reused on a lot of platforms and shared. So if you really decide you like the project, you're sharing it on your, you know, on your platform as well. So yeah, I think it's just giving people one specific reason why they should care. And that's often just describing what you're up to.
Do you find that game companies over under index on marketing their genre? Like, I'm just thinking about like marketing I might have seen for, you know, Epic products or something. I don't know that they say Fortnite, Battle Royale or something like that. But do you feel like genre should have a more central role, especially early on when you're trying to get those early adopters?
It's a good question. I don't think you have to be so on the nose around describing the genre. I would more say that gamers are so sophisticated these days, and there's a lot of built-in assumptions around what comes with a genre, and it's more being sensitive about that. So if you are positioning your game as a first-person shooter game, well, the audience has expectations, including that, like, the gunplay should be really good. Like, it should have a feel to it and a heft. And if you were to position that way and put out some content that looks kind of janky, it's not going to resonate, right? Now, that is not so much a feature in a different style of game, right? If maybe you're going more for a role-playing game. So I think it's more about just being aware of what elements are most important for fans of your genre and making sure you're representing those, because you're always judged on your weakest link, not your strongest. And so you don't want to, you know, you want to play to your strengths, and no game will be perfect at everything. So just know what's most important in terms of the genre. And this is really more of a game product management and design piece than a marketing piece, but it does convey all the way through into the marketing.
Yeah, if the graphics are good and the physics are great, but the game is too slow, that's your weakest link, and I might stop playing your game. Okay, makes sense. So let's kind of get down into the marketing channel side, though. So marketplaces are great places to attract new customers, but it can be hard to compete, especially for smaller studios, getting those coveted, you know, slots and the genre category views. So what are some additional channels? I heard you mention TikTok, obviously social sharing and things like that, but what are other marketing channels game studios can use to attract new players?
Yeah. So to describe the problem, as you say, I mean, marketplaces are great. And one thing that we found is that many marketplaces were not They were not cannibalistic with our own direct-to-consumer channels. They were actually aggregate helpful, right? And so very specifically, a lot of our games, particularly early on at Hi-Rez, were on Steam, which is a great marketplace. But at this point, you know, if you look last year, I think it was 38 titles a day just on that platform. So it's easy to get lost. And the way that algorithm works is the more popular your game is, the more you get placed on the front center. And so it's hard to get things going. So again, I would encourage folks to look at those marketplaces, but not necessarily rely on them, certainly for discovery. And so community is first. So you've got a Discord channel. Now you want to amplify. So it starts with good content. So, you know, even before worrying about TikTok or am I going to pay for Facebook ads or that sort of thing, you are going to want to put out content related to your game and see organically what resonates with people, right? Content these days is shared. So what do you have in terms of a gameplay video or an announcement or a creator talking about it that actually is resonating with people and getting engagement? And then, because again, the gaming audience is just very content hungry, insatiable appetite. And then you can, and we've effectively amplified that on platforms like Facebook. I mean, Facebook, people talk about the aging audience, and that's true. I encourage Facebook just because the targeting is so good. It's just a great way to get data on, again, like how much is our content really resonating, because it's so exact. We can target players of this other particular game in this genre or in this one particular geography. And so it's it might turn out to be a good performance marketing tool for you, where you can, in fact, acquire customers at a lower price than the long-term value, which is the goal. But worst case, you can, with very little money, test your creative marketing message in different geographies. You can test different creative, and it's, in my mind, still probably the most efficient platform for testing the creative. And then TikTok is a great platform. It's great because the right content with $0 of amplifying can reach a very large audience. That's the great part of the algorithm-based approach. And so, you know, our brands are very active on TikTok, and I definitely encourage people to put content on that platform. And then creator marketing, you know, again, at Hi-Rez, when we looked at where we had the most return on investment, it was certain events, which we can talk about, and leveraging influencers. Back then, specifically, it was YouTube and Twitch influencers. Now, the mix has gotten a little more complex, but that is where we saw the biggest return on investment. Events, specifically esports events for Hi-Rez, and then spending with creators after you have a homegrown program of creating your own influencers.
For the esports events, are you talking about live and virtual events? And then if live, are you like coupling that with an existing event, like a conference or a, you know, some other place where game players are already congregating? Like, what do you mean on the event side?
So yes, the, you know, and again, Skillshot does events, small, medium, and large. And so the first phase, when you're really coming out with your game, right, it's now open beta. There's some kind of milestone marketing beat. You have a new DLC, something significant. Often it is an event going where people already are. So you're integrating at a large festival, often a gaming festival. There's many of these, you know, all over the world. And you're showing the game there. And then importantly, you're also capturing content from that event. So it used to be, if you would show up at a DreamHack or PAX or some of these large consumer festivals that might get between 30,000 and 80,000 live foot traffic. That's what you got. And then you got the press out of it. But today we feel that the template is showing up there when you have something important that's new, but then working with the partner or yourself, capturing a ton of content from that event, testimonials. There will probably be creators there that maybe are discovering your game for the first time. And so amplifying, you know, maybe that 30,000 becomes 3 million with the same footprint at the event, but because you're live streaming or you're capturing content and making videos afterwards. So that's the big opportunity with those launch events. Go where other people are and then reach more people over the internet. And that's really for the discovery side of it. Esports is more of an ongoing platform, and it's a way to generate more ongoing content that your players help you collect and build community. And so esports is often less of a discovery technique and more something that increases engagement and monetization, because there's just because there's more passion. And we also have the data, you know, that shows folks that are watching esports themselves, so they're watching other people play to be the best at a game, they tend to play more and then spend more. So that's like a phase two set of events that can be run. Specifically, like at Skillshot, one of the publishers that we work with, been privileged to work with for many, many years. And so there's a large game publisher called Ubisoft, and Ubisoft acquired a much smaller company called Blue Mammoth. They make a game called Brawlhalla. Brawlhalla is like a free-to-play version of Smash, and we've been working with them since they were a tiny independent developer. They now have over 100 million registered players. It's basically the most played fighting game on the planet, and a lot of that has been the partnership with their studio to not just launch the game, but to continually run a large set of esports events that keep their community engaged, playing, spending, going to competitive events, and so forth. So I know we hit a lot there, but I wanted to hit the events for discovery compared to the events for ongoing engagement.
Yeah. So on the esports side, is it the typical playbook there that I'm going to hold an esport event or tournament for my game? I'll either manage that myself or hire another company to manage that for us. Attract players primarily from my existing community, and then kind of leverage the nothing attracts a crowd like a crowd element for acquisition, it sounds like. Is that a common playbook on the esports side?
That is a common playbook. And I would say, I would advise folks to work with a partner on the esports side, even if they later decide to take it in-house. I mean, unlike content development, where I would kind of tell someone, look, you can, with your iPhone these days, record something and start putting content out there. And that's an easy way to get going. Esports is a separate enough endeavor that number one, you just need to decide, am I doing esports just as a marketing event and we're kind of going to do a one and done, in which case it makes sense to work with a partner versus build internal capability. And you're really just doing a launch tournament or an early tournament just to get more word out. Or is this really a fundamental part of our game design where we want to build a competitive game and we want to support esports long term? In which case, again, there's a lot of other disciplines involved that most game developers don't have. How are we going to prevent cheating? How are we going to look at the broadcast experience? How are we going to partner with all of the other ecosystems that are out there in college and high school and pro? And now there's national teams. There's a lot there that, you know, that's a whole separate business development effort. So again, I think it's a decision that should be deliberate and also one where partnership often makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, standing up esports and the function within your org obviously sounds very difficult. I feel like that's also sage advice. On the influencer side, you know, obviously creators and video games, you know, dominate a lot of the conversation in terms of share of voice that players are hearing and seeing. How does a studio go about trying to get exposure with influencers in an authentic way? And I know, you know, some will do pay to play and disclose that, and you know, each brand will make their own choice on things like that. But how do companies pursue that in an effective and an authentic way?
So if you started with your Discord community and you've homegrown some influencers that are passionate about it, and they are probably people you don't have to pay, they're entrepreneurial, and they feel like, wow, this game has potential and I could make some bucks on YouTube or Twitch or TikTok by being early on this game. And that's what they're excited about, and that's great. Phase two is you want to support them with some sort of official partnered creator program. There are platforms out there that help you with that. We don't offer those sort of tech platforms, and I wouldn't necessarily recommend one over the other, but whether you do it homegrown or look yourself, that is a way you can provide support. Often that support might not be anything more than, you know, free codes, or if your game has in-game currency, maybe some monthly allotment of currency, but you're asking them to continue to create content in exchange, you're providing value within the game. And that's a step you could also and should do yourself if creators are a part of your strategy. And then at some point, again, there's often ROI around paying, you know, for additional level of higher reach creators or creators from a different ecosystem, maybe a genre that's adjacent to you, and you kind of owe that community a chance to discover your game and decide if they like that as well. And so that usually involves some financial outlay one way or another. It might be directly to the creators. It might be, a lot of times the way we'll do it is, between Skillshot and Ghost, we'll work with the developer to host an event. So maybe this is a tournament or a showcase, and it has a large prize pool associated with it based on, could just be winning or could be engagement metrics. But in that way, a lot of the funding is the prize pool. The creators aren't being directly paid, but it's interesting enough for them as an opportunity that they participate. And so rather than paying directly, it's there's an incentive there that the developer is helping to underwrite. And for some companies, they like that approach, you know, better than directly paying an agency or a creator network. Both approaches can work. We've done both effectively. And I would say another piece of just wisdom is, I think, in our experience, and also Twitch put out some data supporting this, you don't have to go for the mega, mega influencers that also are more expensive to get their attention. Medium-sized folks that have a community often provide better return. Just when you look at the amount spent and then the percentage of the community that is actually engaged with the new game. So oftentimes supporting a larger number of mid-sized folks versus a one and done with the top person is a better strategy. It's also more likely that those mid-sized folks may adopt your game from that point on because they like it and their community likes it. If you're at the very top of Twitch, and it's a great place to be because you're in demand and you get a lot of paid gigs. And so you tend to go where the ongoing money is versus a campaign that engages mid-level folks. And they decide, oh, I'm going to add this in to my weekly stream and do it one night a week or two nights a week. So another thought there.
I like how you pointed out that you need to consider the entrepreneurial aspect of the influencer, even if you're not paying them for their, for a spot within their audience, their whatever they're publishing. And so it makes me think, like you talked about providing the mechanisms to support them, like codes or in-game currency, so they can play your game and demo the aspects they might be including in the content that they're creating. What are your thoughts on like relationship management? I mean, is that an in-house function a lot of times, or how should studios think about having relationships with those influencers?
It's a great question. So again, this Discord first approach, there typically is a community manager who's having a relationship with, 100, then maybe 1,000 or 10,000, folks on Reddit and on Discord. So that is a role that is very important, may not be a full-time role, full-time position. And then often studios will utilize that same person in the early days, but then potentially add a creator relations manager, if it becomes a big enough piece of their strategy. And so it is an important role.
Right, because you're going to let them know early on about releases or DLCs or things like that.
That's right. It really is, the PR listeners may not like this, but my truth telling would say, the old role of PR and talking to the gaming media used to be magazines and now websites. The creators are more important and have higher reach these days and higher relevancy to consumers around where they're going to get their games. And so creator management, community management, more important than press relations for anyone that's just actually looking at growth. So yeah, it's a similar sort of function though, just a little less buttoned up, a little less corporate speak, a little more real and authentic. And another tip, they're entrepreneurs, right? So they know their audience better than you do. You know your game, but they know their audience. So working with creators, whether it's at Ghost or your own, the brands that do best release the reins a little bit and let the creator do what the creator does that is authentic, because they only make money when they put out content that resonates with their community. And brands that hold things too tightly, the message is gonna look sponsored, like a canned read. The audience is gonna know it. Creator's not gonna be into it as much. And those tend to not be ongoing relationships that are win-win, which of course is what you want.
Yeah, thinking that you're, the best expression of your game is in X way, and maybe that's you're like trying to push a speed run and they want to do more like a challenge type thing. I could see where forcing that could produce very unauthentic content. Well, Todd, this was very informative. I really appreciate you joining us today and sharing your thoughts here.
Awesome. Well, hopefully it's helpful. I, as a, independent game developer in the past, I'm rooting for everyone who's working hard. It's very hard to make a good game, even harder to get people to discover your game, and certainly appreciated sharing the tips. If I can give a parting call to action for folks, just if you're interested in these topics, you can follow me. I'm Todd Allen Harris, mainly on LinkedIn and Twitter. And that's myself as well as these companies. Anyone that wants some help or a partner in helping their games get discovered would love to have that conversation.
Excellent. Well, thanks, Todd. Really appreciate it again. If you'd like to learn even more about what Todd's up to, you can also visit skillshot.com. Thanks, everyone, for joining us on the Growth Stage podcast. If you'd like to learn about how FastSpring can help your digital product business grow, check out fastspring.com. Thanks, everybody, and enjoy the rest of your day.